Hi, everybody. Phil Parr again. Let me start my little Radio Shack stopwatch so we'll have a time here. Our guest today is Ayla Montgomery, a lady who I have never met, but we're all going to meet her together. Hi there. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
What part of the country are you in?
I live in Portland, Oregon.
Portland, Oregon. Now, is Portland like Seattle? Is Portland wet all the time? Is it?
It has a reputation of being wet all the time, but actually it's pretty sunny right now. It's going to be 98 degrees today.
98. Well, there's nothing wrong with that. That's that's about what it is here. It's about we're in Texas, and that's about the same thing as it would be here. Now, you are, what is your level of vision?
I am legally blind. I'm total in my left eye, and I have 20/800 in my right eye, so I can see a little bit out of my right eye, but mainly just shapes and colors and things like that, but no
that's,
clear vision.
That's far below driving ability. That's far below.
Yeah, far below driving. I can't drive anymore.
The ability, you can't drive anymore. Well, which would indicate that at one time you could
Absolutely.
Drive.
I contracted a disease called iritis and glaucoma in January of 2001, and my vision started deteriorating at that point, and I had many surgeries and things trying to correct the vision, but nothing could help, so now I had to stop driving and learn everything all over
again. So now you're legally blind, and you have to learn to do things a new, completely new way, I suppose.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. My wife learned to pour coffee in the dark because she saw me doing it. She said, "Well, heck, if I can do it, if he can do it, I can do it."
Mm-hmm.
So, and she was perfectly sighted. Anyway, but you never thought at all about being blind or anything like that up until January of when 2001. You said,
"Yep, January 2001." No, I was driving. I was just a normal average person.
Do you have children? Do you have a family? You know?
Right now I am engaged to be married to a wonderful man that I met, and he's just a highlight of my life, and I met him, and he's totally blind, and I met him on the Dragon Boat team.
Well, if you're going to marry somebody, it's good that they're the light of your life.
Absolutely.
And you met him on the Dragon Boat team. Up until that, you had not been... What did you do? Were you going to college? Were you working?
Well, prior to that, I was a corporate trainer at Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon for 9 years. I have a bachelor's degree in biology. I went to Portland Community College here in Portland, and then after I graduated with my associate's degree in biology, one of my professors had recommended that I continue on, and he stated that they're at University of Alaska Anchorage. They have a wonderful biology department with lots of geology focus, and so he had recommended that I go up there for their accelerated program. So I packed up and moved to Alaska all by myself finished my bachelor's degree up there, and then moved to San Francisco for a while, and then I came back to Portland, and that's when I started going blind, and I was working at Blue Cross as a corporate trainer, and things were fading out, and I couldn't hardly see, and everything was done on PowerPoint. So it was really difficult to be able to read slideshows and to teach my classes, and at that point, I kind of like stopped working and went on long-term disability, and then I finished all my surgeries, and then I got connected with the Oregon Commission for the Blind.
And here we are now.
And here we are now.
Now, you taught people how to do what at Blue Cross Blue Shield? How to sell insurance, or how to do what?
Yeah, how to process medical insurance claims, and also their computer system that they used, which was the CAS system. So I'm really computer literate, and my focus in biology was in geology also. But I was also doing a little bit of computer science as a background, and so as a minor. And then at that point, I was teaching, and I have worked at Blue Cross before I moved to Alaska, so when I came back and they said, "Oh, we'd like to put you in as a trainer instead of as just a processor," so that's how I got started in training.
Yeah, everybody's got to eat, so you take a job, and you didn't have a job in the field that you chose, which was biology.
Exactly, and it's really difficult to get into a biology area here, and I didn't really have a firm focus, but I knew I wanted to teach, and I was going to go on and become a science teacher for, like, high school. But I was kind of burnt out on school, so I just really wanted to get a job and start supporting myself, and so I took the job back at Blue Cross.
With Blue Cross, yeah. So but you knew at the time you took it that this is probably going to be a temporary.
Right.
This is something I'm going to do. It's like I said.
9 years later, I was still there.
You're still doing it because, well, we all have everything. But you went to Alaska by yourself, and you went to San Francisco. So you were a sighted lady, but you were a brave girl. You did things on your own. You got to admire that. But you knew this was temporary. But you, like I said, you had to eat. You have to support yourself. Okay, so you began losing your eyesight in 2001. It terrified you, scared you?
Oh, absolutely. And I was really depressed. I mean, I went through the summer. By June, I think my last day at work was June 25th, 2001.
Uh-huh.
And so the summer, that particular summer, I had a lot of growth, along with my family, because my sisters and my mother and everyone, they had to deal with, oh, now I've got a blind sibling and a blind daughter that, you know, I was never blind before, so it was all new to them as well. So we all went through this big adjustment period. But then I you know, fell down a few times outside because I didn't have a cane or anything, and I was like, okay, I need to do something.
And you
so
were in denial.
Yes, go ahead.
You were in denial.
I was in denial, and I just wanted to live life normally, so I had to sell my car because it was sitting out there, and I was tempted to go out and drive, and even though the doctor told me not to drive, but I was tempted, you know, every time I wanted to go to the store and stuff, and I couldn't do it. I had to wait for someone to come take me, and that was... So I sold the car, so I wouldn't have that temptation.
Yeah.
And then on September 11th, the famous September 11th, 2001, I met my counselor from the Oregon Commission for the Blind, came over to my house, and we were sat there crying in awe of the tragedy of the bombings. And so then she just scooped me up and took me to the commission on that very same day. I met some great people there, and I started working with the Commission for the Blind and learning how to do ADLs and all kinds of things, and mobility.
There is no question that having something like that happen to you, or having something like that happen to anyone, would be traumatic, and I don't think anyone would blame you for being depressed. I would have been. Everybody. I was born like this, so I didn't have that to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to see for a long time. You got to, you had a good life. You had a good time. And you have a good life ahead of you. It is the reason we do this show is for people exactly like you, to show them that it, while it is a hell of an inconvenience, it can be done.
It can definitely be done. I was really scared in the beginning. But now it's been 4 years, and I am blessed that I am alive and I'm breathing and I can still do the things that I love, and I've learned to do things that I've never done before, and it's just amazing.
I'm so glad I found you. You're exactly what we're looking for, exactly the the kind of person we're looking for with that good outlook. I've had several on the show. This is about the 87th or 8th show of this that we've done, and we just focus on blind people who are dealing with blindness, who are dealing with the fact that they are blind and living everyday lives. And here you are getting married and probably starting a family or doing whatever you're going to do. All right, let's get on to your, I think you said in your message that you had never participated in sports before, but now you do.
Nope, I never did. In high school, I was never really an athletic kind of person. I was more of a bookworm, so I was constantly reading and things, so I never really participated in sports. But when I started the Commission for the Blind in September, I was approached in November by my mobility instructor saying that they were going to try to put together a visually impaired dragon boat team. And it's never been done in the United States before, and so they wanted to know if I would participate. And she noticed that I liked to walk a lot because I was always out. And so she said, "You're in pretty good shape. Let's see if you'd like to try this." And I said, "Okay." And so I went to a couple of the dry land practices, which means that we're sitting in a classroom setting with our seats right next to each other, like they made it seem like it was a boat, but it wasn't. It was in a conference room. And so they gave us all these paddles and stuff, which are, it looks like an oar, but it's called a paddle. And we practiced doing that in the conference room. And so we did this like three times, and I'm like, okay, this seems fun. And so then in April, we actually got to hit the water for the first time, and that was April 2002. And our team name is Blind Ambition. We're America's first blind dragon boat team. So we hit the water in April of 2002, and I've been doing it ever since. And I was one of the original first co-captains because of my spirit and enthusiasm. They voted me in as a co-captain.
Yeah.
And so we were supposed to just do the Portland Rose Festival, but they saw someone from the International Dragon Boat Association saw an interview that I had done on television regarding how dragon boating was changing my life as a newly visually impaired person. And so they wanted us to come down and compete in Oakland, California in the International Dragon Boats.
Yeah.
And we were like, our little blind from Portland is going to go to this International Dragon Boat race. And so they helped me do a lot of the fundraising and getting our team down there. And Enterprise Rent-A-Car gave us two 15-passenger vans to transport our team from Portland down to Oakland. And so we went down there, and we had a blast. And we just couldn't believe how enthusiastic everybody was to have us there. We were stunned.
Yeah.
And so we didn't win any medals because, of course, we were brand new. We'd only been paddling for about 4 months when we went there. And so they gave us this trophy, and it's the honorary Spirit of the Dragon trophy, and that trophy is still in the Commission for the Blind here in Portland. And then we decided that we wanted to continue paddling, and the Commission for the Blind would only sponsor us for that particular Rose Festival. So we started doing our own fundraisers, and we became a 501c3, and I'm still the president of our organization, and I'm the current captain. And we have had three different captains over the last 3 years, and I'm back captain. I'm a captain again.
You're the captain again.
It's just been a wonderful roller coaster ride and of lots of ups and downs. We've competed in several races this year. We were in five so far. We've won three silver medals so far this year, and we're racing again this weekend. We just got back from Long Beach yesterday, and we raced down there, which we came in sixth, which was kind of depressing, but 6 out of 90 isn't too bad.
I'd say it's great.
Yeah.
I'd say that's stunning.
Yes, it was very, very amazing.
Fifth out of 90.
Huh?
Fifth out of 90.
Yes.
And now these are against sighted people.
Yes. As far as I know, there is only two visually impaired teams in the United States. Our team, and then the Commission for the Blind started another team for Rose Festival called Sound Waves, and they've been here for 2 years now. We've been around for almost five, so they... The Soundwaves team only does Rose Festival as a Commission for the Blind sponsored team. Now, our team, we look for funding in all different kinds of sources. We're always looking for funding. And there's a race in Houston coming up in October, and we're trying to find funding to go. I've been speaking with Eugene Lee from the Houston Dragon Boat Association, and he's trying to find funding because they would like to start a visually impaired team in Texas. And so I went to Seattle, and I gave a couple of speeches up there, and now Tacoma is starting to develop a visually impaired team, but they only have like five visually impaired people that are interested so far.
Yeah, sorry.
So with the United Blind and the American Council for the Blind, they put together a kind of a makeshift team of only these five people plus 15 sighted people on their boat.
Mm-hmm.
But Canada, amazingly enough, they have three visually impaired teams up there. One is called the Eye of the Dragon. That's the very first visually impaired team in the world, as far as I know. And they have been around for about 12 years, I think. And then the next team that is called Blind Fury. And it's Blind Fury, the force to be reckoned with.
Really?
And then the last team that I found out about was called Sonar Dragons.
Mm-hmm.
And they're based out of Kelowna, Canada. And now that I know that there's all these other teams, I want to promote the abilities of the blind and have teams sprouting up in the United States. So we went to Arizona, and we competed down there, and we spoke to several people at the Arizona Dragon Boat Association about putting together a dragon boat team in Arizona. And then we were just in Long Beach, and we did a couple of interviews down there trying to get a team started in California. And now I'd like to go to Texas and help Eugene put together a visually impaired team in Houston. So it's amazing. This sport is the fastest growing sport in the country, and I, in my opinion, in the world. We've been trying to get it to the Olympics, but at this point, we have to look at 2012 because we applied for the 2008, but rugby beat us.
Really?
Yeah, so now there's going to be rugby in 2008 in the Olympics, and so we're looking at 2012 as a possibility of having dragon boat racing. And so we were in communication with the Olympic Committee trying to be an exhibition team to go and just give an exhibition race for the Olympics. But because dragon boating didn't make it on the agenda for the list, we aren't going to get to go to China.
You know, it's wonderful to meet someone who is this enthusiastic about something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who is and you are this is a passion of yours. I mean,
definitely
it's
a passion of mine. Yeah, it's been a lifelong thing for me now that I found dragon boating, and it's very good exercise. It's great to have this group of people that you work with on a regular basis. You see each other three times a week. I mean, our team is 75% visually impaired, so we try to maintain that by having 15 visually impaired people on the boat at all times, and sometimes more than that. But this is something that I felt changed my world, and I was starting out this, you know, poor little me, you know, I'm blind now, yeah. I'm not the same as I used to be, I can't be a teacher anymore, but you know what, I'm a dragon boater, and I'm on America's first blind dragon boat team, and I'm very proud of that, and I'm proud to be the president. I've been the president for 4 years, and I keep getting voted back in, so
well,
I'll continue to be the president of my dragon boat team until they tell me that it's time for me to move on. But my mother died 2 years ago, and before that, she told me that this is something that she sees for my future, and that I should look into the dragon boat to find myself a life partner. And I looked around at my team members, and I didn't see anyone that I thought would be my life partner. And then when my mother died, I was like, okay, Mom, I'm going to find somebody. And she said, find someone that's visually impaired, that's stable, that's happy. And so I found Kevin, and he's just the highlight of my life. He's wonderful. He's been blind since birth, and we're in love. We've been dating, and now we just bought a house together. We're getting married, and it's just amazing that I found this person.
A lot of things happened to you in the last 3 years, haven't they?
You've
had a lot of changes. I tell you what, let's take a short break, if you don't mind, and we'll come back. We want to talk physically about exactly how this dragon boat thing is done, about what you do physically. Ayla Montgomery is our guest. I'm Phil Parks. Show is called Blind Like Me. Be back in just a minute. Hang on.
Here's a website our crack research team certifies screen reader friendly. Now, with this week's Blind Site, here's Tim Cummings.
Have you ever thought of getting into maybe growing some house plants and you really weren't sure where to start? You should take a look at www.plantcare.com. This site has hundreds of different of plants that you can look up, whether it's herbs or whatever you're interested in, and it'll give you growing tips and really help you get you started on your way. I would give it a screen reader friendliness rating of an 8. Again, the website is www.plantcare.com. For Blind Sites, until next time, this is Tim Cummings saying, keep on blindsiding.
If you found a screen reader friendly website you'd like us to mention, send your email to blindlikeme, all one word, at txucom.net. And join us again next time for Blind Sight.
Our guest is Ayla Montgomery from Portland, is that right? Portland, Oregon. She is recently blinded, began losing her eyesight in 2001, has no vision in one eye, and pretty good partial in the other eye. Of course, long since given up driving. Ayla is into a thing called dragon boat racing, and she is, to say the least, enthusiastic about it.
Very much so.
And that's wonderful. Tell us now how this works. Describe the situation to us.
Okay. Well, on Blind Ambition, we, because we're all visually impaired, or most of us, 75% of our boats visually impaired, in the front of the boat, first I'll describe the boats. They're 48 feet long and 4 feet wide. And so there's 11 benches, but we only sit in 10 of them. So we sit 2 by 2 in the benches. And in the front, there's a person called the caller who sits up in the front in a chair and calls out a cadence. And then there's a steering person in the back called a tiller, and they run the till back there. And, of course, those two positions are sighted people.
Have to be.
Not visually impaired. Even though we do have one of our callers is a backup caller, and that happens to be Kevin, my fiancé.
Who is totally blind.
He's a wonderful cadence caller. But our caller and our coach is Marilyn Adair. She's a retired principal, school principal. And then our steers person is Sean Westaway. She has a PhD, and she works at Oregon Health Sciences University, and she's also a biology person, so we have a lot in common.
Really, you do?
So anyway, so Sean is in the back, and she's steering the boat while we paddle the boat. And so we're sitting 2 by 2 in a boat, so one person on the left and one person on the right, or we call it port and starboard. And you hold the paddle in your hand, and you you push the paddle into the water in the front of you and pull it back at the sound of the cadence in the front. So Marilyn will just say, paddles up, and you put your paddle up like you're getting ready to paddle, and then she'll say one, and every time she counts out a number, you put your paddle into the water. So it's mainly about synchronicity. You want to be in total sync with your partner in front of you and behind you, and so in order to do that, you have to make sure that you put your paddle into the water on the number. And so she calls out numbers, so she'll say 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, etc. And then she'll continue, and then she'll take the rate up higher. We try to keep our rate somewhere between 66 and 70 strokes per minute. So in an average race piece, we could be doing 300, 400 strokes order to do that. So cardio workout is really, really good. And this is called an anaerobic workout because you're not really like moving your legs and running or anything, but you are moving your body and pulling the water. And so that's pretty much the stroke is all out in front of you, not behind you. And you put the paddle in like you're bending over like 5 degrees in your seat, and you put the paddle in the water, and you bring the paddle back to like your mid-thigh area as you're just sitting there, and then you put it back into the front. Almost like if you can imagine playing choo-choo as a child, and you're going forward and back, moving your arms, going forward, choo-chooing along. It's kind of like that, but it's a lot more intense because they can take that rate up to 70 strokes a minute, and you're talking 70 long, pull, strong, deep strokes, and it's quite the workout.
Now, you're a right-handed. You sit on the right.
I sit on both sides. We halfway into the practice, we switch sides and we go on the other side. I start on the left, and then I move to my stronger side, which is on the right. And and Kevin is the opposite of me, and we're not necessarily always bench partners. We switch around in the boat, and then you have the two people in the very front of the boat that are stroking. They're called the lead strokers, and they set the time of the cadence. So Marilyn, our coach, watches the two people in the front, which one of them is visually impaired and the other one is sighted. And that the reason that we have a sighted person in the front to watch the other visually impaired person is because your timing has to be exact. And it has to be perfectly in time. So our sighted person watches the visually impaired person, and then they set the time of the whole boat. And so Marilyn counts her cadence on their every time they enter the water. She counts a number.
Okay, so they're kind of setting the pace, but I don't see why two blind people couldn't do that.
Well, because you can't watch the other person. And so, otherwise, the caller would be setting the pace.
Yes.
And that's okay. We have had two blind people up in the front before, but it works out a lot better having one sighted person and one visually impaired person.
Okay, so we've got three sighted people in the boat, and the rest of you are blind.
Yes.
Are legally blind or partially blind or totally blind?
Yeah, we have, let me see. I think we have five partials and the rest are totals.
Okay. no, this is great. I've never heard of this. I knew nothing about it. Still know very little about it. And you're racing. You're racing from point A to point B.
Exactly. And so each of the race courses vary, but the usual length or distance is 500 meters, which is about a quarter of a mile. And so. And some of the races are a little bit longer. We raced in one race, and it was 600 meters. And then the one at Portland Rose Festival, that one is 538 meters. How they came up with a 38, I don't know, but they did.
Yeah.
And so so we usually, when we do our practice races, we always try to do them a little bit longer. So it seems like, wow, this was a short race,
yeah.
even though, because if you're practicing at just the right amount, you don't have the energy to get past that. But we're talking about usually our race pieces run between 212 to 240, depending on the current and the different tides and things. So it could vary on the water a little bit on our times. But in Rose Festival, the 538 meters are done in these larger boats called Kaohsiung boats. And those are Taiwanese style. They're big. They weigh about 1,800 pounds. And there's only 16 paddlers instead of 20. So you lose four paddlers and you gain twice as much weight to pull. So each person in the boat has to pull. If it weighs 1,600 pounds, you have to pull 100 pounds each plus your own body weight.
Yep. Each time you
throw. That's a lot of water to be pulling to get that boat moving.
It is. Now, you race each boat. You don't all race at the same time. You do it. Do you draw a number? How do you know when you?
They usually set the lanes. Like this weekend, we're going to be racing at Selwood. It's going to be four boat heats, so which means that there's going to be four boats racing in each heat.
And
okay. So you. Based on time, so like if on the first race we get a score of 2:23, so pulling a number out.
All right, that's
good. Then the next race we get 2:20. Then on the next day they're going to set us into a category called recreational or competitive or what have you, A, B, C, whatever. And they'll put us in with teams that have like times, so we're only racing other teams that have similar times to our times, so that it's a fair race. And so when you're racing with four boats at a time, your lane is just a random draw of which lane you get, and you just get on the boat, and then you have four boats going at one time. Now, in Long Beach this last weekend, we had six boat heats, which means that there were six boats racing in each heat. And so that was really tricky, too. And in Kent, Washington, they have what they call held starts, because normally what we do is we just paddle out to the starting line, and then there's a start boat out there that tells everybody to get lined up, and then they line them up, and then they send them out. Well, in Kent, Washington, near Seattle, they have held starts where they hold on to the back of the boat until and so that everybody is lined up along this dock, and they're holding on to the boat, and then they say, you know, the start is usually paddlers prepare to start, attention please, and then a cannon blast goes off behind you and it just scares the daylights out of you and they let go of your boat and you start paddling.
And you start paddling and the girl starts counting up front. One, two, three, four, and she counts, and eight,
take it up, and then she keeps going up and taking the rate up higher and higher.
That's what I'm saying. She starts out at a certain rate, and of course she's done this before, so she knows about how fast to start you.
Right. And our coach has been coaching for about 10 years now. She was, 1989, I think, is when she started. So I guess it's more than 10 years. 15 years.
Yeah.
And she's been a paddler, a caller, a steerer. And her husband also is one of our assistant coaches. They met on a dragon boat team also. And they went on a team over to Australia to race down there. And they met, fell in love, and got married.
Now, they're both sighted, though.
They're both sighted.
And you're just overjoyed with this. This is your life, isn't it?
This is my life now, and I've never even heard of it before. It's amazing. It's totally taken over my life. I'm blessed that I have this wonderful sport that I get to go racing, and I get to go to international places and race, and I have it here in my hometown, has three races a year, so I get to race three here, and we go to Seattle, and we went to Long Beach, we've been to Arizona, we've been to Kent, we've been to Victoria, B.C., we've been to Oakland, San Francisco, we're just traveling around, paddling a boat.
This would tend to build up a person's arms.
Arms and back.
Pretty good.
You don't just use your arms because you're actually putting your whole body into it. You use your legs to brace yourself in kind of like a three-point stance. I don't know if you played football or anything, Phil, but you put yourself into a three-point stance in the boat, and then you lean forward. And so when you're pulling back, you're using your arms and your back and your shoulders and your lats on your sides, your latissimus, and you're just pulling that paddle and that water through the water.
It's quite a workout, isn't it?
It is. At the end of the hour, usually it's like, oh, I'm so ready to go to the hot tub. Yeah, and give you food. We definitely need some energy there.
And that's the reward, is the hot tub.
Is the hot tub, yeah. We do have a hot tub here at our house.
Oh, do you now?
It's a requirement. So when we were looking to buy our house, we said, okay, we have to have a hot tub or a place to put a hot tub. And our house that we have has a hot tub and a pool, so we were really lucky there.
Kevin, what does Kevin do for a living? Where does Kevin work?
Well, Kevin is a writer. He does a lot of our writing and poetry, and he sings. And so he writes a lot of stories and poems and stuff that goes out in the newsletter for Dragon Sports, and he just loves his life. He has a bachelor's degree too in communications, and so he's
really in radio television.
No, just communications writing.
Oh, writing. Okay.
English, grammar, that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, but he's an amazing person, and he was born prematurely, 3 months premature, and was given too much oxygen at birth. And so it did damage to his retinas, and so he's never seen anything before.
So you get to tell him colors, and you get to...
I do, and I can, because I still have a little bit of vision in my right eye, we get along really well, and Kevin has a guide dog, and his name is Joel.
I hear the guide dog bark while I go. I thought I heard a dog.
Yep, that was him.
That's the guide
Joel.
Dog. Yeah. Now, Kevin writes for a living?
Well, he has his money that he has, so he doesn't really have to work.
Doesn't really have to work.
He writes for fun.
Writes for fun. Well, don't we all? Is he working on a novel?
He's working on a lot of poetry.
A lot of poetry. Mm-hmm. Well, I tell you, I'd like to interview Kevin sometime.
Oh, that'd be wonderful.
I'd like to interview Kevin. Let's get this one done, and maybe we'll get, I guess that you can reach him at the same number, couldn't you?
You can.
So I'll keep your number. I tell you, we're going to take another break and sign off here. But before we do, I want you to give some websites, a phone number, some contact information where someone who's interested in this, because I know one old boy down in Houston that's just going to be thrilled by and want to start a team. And so do you have email you can give us?
I do.
Okay.
I think that we would really love to come to Houston. If anyone's available to help us out with funding or anything, we'd love to come down there and talk to the community and get dragon boating starting in Texas. Our website is www.blindambition.info. And that's all lowercase.
All right.
And my email address is
blindambition.info at what?
No, that's it. Just dot info.
Just blindambition.info. And there's no .com on the end. There's no .org. No,
info is another one for .com. We tried to get blindambition.com. However, there's a window cleaning business that is Blind Ambition.
Somebody else has got that. Yeah.
So we had to go with what they had available.
Well,
so
we tried to domain Love Is Blind, and someone's already got that, of course.
Mm-hmm. So it's www.blindambition.info.
www.blindambitions.info. Okay, go ahead.
Uh-huh.
Sorry.
And then my email address is Ayla_Paddles, PADDLES, at yahoo.com.
All right.
My phone number is 503-430-1910.
That's the phone number I called.
Mm-hmm.
That's you and Kevin's phone number.
Another website to check out would be www.dragonsports.org.
Okay.
And if you just key in, do a Google search on dragon boat races, you will get thousands of
lots of hits
that will take you to different links about dragon boating in the country. And if you have an opportunity, just to look up dragon boating. I know that I spoke to Jeff Campbell about the possibility of us going to Tampa, Florida. He was amazed when he saw us over the weekend in Long Beach. And so now we got an invitation to go to Tampa. But, again, funding is our biggest problem. And we are a 501c3 nonprofit.
Yes.
We spend all of our money on outfitting and practicing for our team and to take us to different venues across the world.
All right. Well, it thrills me to see someone, like I said, this enthusiastic. My grandson at one time was into Power Rangers, and I thought at that time, I wish I was that enthusiastic about something. And
Bill, you need to get in the Dragon Boat.
And you are. Well, I'm a little old for that. Hey, I'm 64. I'm a little old for Dragon
Boat. You know that last year we paddled with a woman, and she was 83 years old.
Is that right?
Yes. Well, and our oldest person on our team is 65.
Really?
And she's totally blind.
Well, you tell her hi.
My youngest person is 16, so it is for all ages.
16 to 65, huh?
16 to 65, and no, make that 83, because Shirley was 83.
16 to 83, that's a pretty good age range, Ayla, I'd say.
No matter how old you are, get involved in dragon boat racing.
Well,
so much fun.
You're the best spokesman these folks have got, and it's been a joy to meet you and a joy to talk with you, and I'll be calling and tell Kevin to get ready. We're going to have him on the show also, and I'll call you and let you know before this runs on the internet, okay?
Okay, perfect. Thanks.
Thanks. Ayla Montgomery's been our guest. Back in just a minute with more Blind Like Me. Serve.
The thing I like the best about the Blind Handyman list, great place to exchange information and gather ideas on anything to do with being a handyman around the house.
I have found out how to fix my garbage disposal on the handyman list, and it works.
If you'd like to join the Blind Handyman list, send a blank email to blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
The thing I like about the Blind Handyman list, I'm the moderator, and I can delete you if I want to. So don't get out of line, stay on topic.
That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
All right, are we ready?
We're ready.
We're visiting with a lady who calls herself Kathy Seven Williams, and I was poking fun at her. I thought Seven was an internet name, but it is actually, was at one time, or I guess still is, your name.
It is my maiden name,
spelled
yes.
Spelled S-E-V-E-N?
S-E-V-E-N, just like the number.
Kathy Seven.
Commonly known since a very early age as K7.
K7. I would imagine that you got some teasing as a child. People said, well, I'd like to meet the first six, you know.
No. No, the best thing with the name was when my father was staying at a hotel in Washington, D.C., and he got to the desk to register, and he signed in as Michael John Seven. And the person at the desk said, yeah, right, sure. And he goes, what do you mean, yeah, right, sure? And they said, you know, that's very funny. Now what's your real name?
Yeah.
And he looked at the name above him, and it was Six. And Six was the CEO of, I believe it was TWA Airlines.
Get out of town. That really happened?
True story.
That's funny. I love it. Does your father share your good sense of humor?
Yeah. Yeah, it's genetic.
It is genetic.
Yeah, my children have it. It's nice.
Now, you have, I think, three children, right?
Two children.
They're both grown.
I have a daughter, Tracy, who's 27, and a son, Bill, who is 23.
Nothing wrong with either one of their eyes. No blindness problem.
Well, they both wear glasses. Their dad couldn't see. It was really too bad.
As does my son. His mother could see, but he inherited some sort of genetic blindness. You have, what level of vision would you say you are?
My vision's about 20/1500. I really don't have enough to use. It's just that no one told me that at a very early age, so I've been using it.
That's about what Don Shaw has, about that same level of vision. You know who Don Shaw is, right? Does Handyman show with us?
Yeah.
And you are on the Handyman list, and obviously you do some handy person type stuff, right?
Well, not a lot. I try, but often I decide that this would be a really good thing to pay for.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But I do look at it, and I do try, and I'm very good at figuring out other uses for things.
Do you have an example?
Like when I fixed my sink plug with the wire tie, because the plug gizmo kept popping out of the back and then wouldn't come up and down, and so I stuck a wire tie through the little slot and tied it to the plunger.
Okay, you're talking about the thing that moves the stopper up and down. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah,
that's,
it worked.
You could have called some guy out, and he would have said, yes, ma'am, that'll be $51.95.
That's right, and then he would have used a wire tie.
He would have used a wire tie or some sort of barbed wire or something.
There you go.
And you have gotten into digital photography.
I am very into digital photography. I've been into photography since I was about six. And got my first little brownie box camera.
Could you see better then? Was your vision better then?
No.
It was the same.
But I learned very early because my dad had a dark room.
Oh.
And so I learned that if I took pictures and then, like, blew them up, even just in the equipment, I could look on the base of the equipment where you would put the paper and print it if you were going to print it. But I could just blow the pictures up and look there and see the bigger picture and look at things that I otherwise hadn't been able to see.
Okay.
And so that got me started wanting to take pictures and look at what I wasn't able to see in the real world.
But you were really lucky that your father had it. I mean, he had the chemicals and everything to develop film back to when they did it that way.
Right, right.
Back when that was the...
We had a little spy camera, a little Minox spy camera.
Was that his vocation, or did he...
Oh, no. No, he was... let's see, at that time he was senior scientist for Hughes Aircraft.
Oh, wow, that's pretty impressive. That bodes good for your handyman skills.
Yes, absolutely.
I suppose. And where were you raised, by the way, if you know?
Mostly in Southern California, in Pomona and Claremont.
Yeah, so you've lived on the west. You're on the west coast now, right?
We spent 20 years behind the Zion Curtain in Utah, and then Jay and I came back out here in 2000. Jay and I were married in '94, and we came out here in 2000 to live in Washington.
I love it. Behind the Zion Curtain. That's excellent.
Yes.
See, we call ours Behind the Pine Curtain.
Okay.
Pine Curtain, and we have Behind the Pine Curtain, If You Should Get Lost, Beware of the Baptists and the Pentecost. Just a little mind.
Yes.
A little fun there.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Into digital photography. What digital program do you use? Adobe Photoshop, or what do you?
I'm using. What is it? Yeah, it's Photoshop Album, Photo Album. I'm not using the full Photoshop at the present. It does a whole lot of editing of things that I neither see well enough to want to do nor really have an interest of doing, like, you know, putting a cow's head on a dog or those kinds of things. I pretty much just want to massage the pictures that I take with my digital camera so that I can look at them. And if they're not bright enough, I brighten them. If they're not clear enough, I sharpen them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I crop and, you know, do things like that to get the best amount of what I want to see into the picture.
To see what you want to see.
Right, right.
Now, how does JAWS work with this program?
JAWS is really sucky with things visual. Sucky is a scientific term.
Yeah, it is. I realized that right off. You didn't fool me a bit.
Well, JAWS is very sucky with things visual, partly because the way it's structured, it uses what they call the off-screen model and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
It's not made to do things visual, and I believe that they're kind of confident that their customers aren't going to be doing a lot of things visual, so that's not a heavy point for them to work towards. And JAWS does tend to lock up with the photo processing equipment, photo processing software, and not work too well. So often you have to get where you want to be and then kill JAWS and then work with nose on screen from that point on.
Okay, I got you. But I guess somebody that was much brighter than I could write some scripts for.
It's not about scripts. JAWS is real unfriendly to visual drag and drop. If you're working with the mouse and visually, say, dragging a picture to here, or one of the things you do when you crop pictures is you start in the one corner and you're dragging a little dotted line, like as if it were a string, that you're surrounding the part of the picture that you want to keep, and you drag that across the picture and stop it. And then cut the outside off the picture.
JAWS
is not real friendly about these visual graphic functions because JAWS is not a graphic application.
Have you tried WindowEyes? Is it any better?
No, I haven't. I wouldn't expect it to be because, again, they're not graphic applications.
Oh, yeah.
They're not meant to be doing graphic work. As long as you're doing matrixy left, right, up, down, non-curved, you know, doing linear things, I imagine to some degree if you wanted to go in and use the keypad mouse controls instead of using the mouse to drag and drop and so forth, you might be able to get some functionality out of it. But JAWS really isn't. JAWS is trying to read the screen to you.
Yes.
When you're editing photographs, what you're doing is drawing and changing colors and, you know, manipulating visual images, which is totally not a JAWS thing.
But now, as we have all learned, as we stumble along with JAWS and WindowEyes also, there are people who may figure out something you didn't figure out. And
so to
compensate for that, you have set up a list.
I have indeed.
Now, this is for people who deal with digital photography that have a vision problem.
Correct.
Okay. Give us the URL, and we'll talk a minute and give it again in case somebody...
Okay. The list is at Yahoo. It's, excuse me, it's... Yeah, I just lost it. It's
really?
digital-vision@yahoogroups.com. And while you can sign up for the list via just subscribe-digitalvision, you know, at yahoogroups.com, that doesn't get you into the entire list services. And one of the things that is really nice about the list is you can post your pictures.
Mm-hmm.
But that you have to do by going through Yahoo and signing up for Yahoo and signing up for the list via Yahoo so that then you can access the list location where we have files posted and photos posted and chat room and all of that kind of thing.
But if you just want to receive the daily traffic on the list, you can do it by...
Right.
What did you call it?
Then you can just subscribe via email.
Subscribe via email.
Yeah.
And then you just get the list. And someone might have some things that, like we all, that you hadn't thought of or that someone else hadn't thought
exactly.
of. There's always, you know.
Exactly. And that's what I'm hoping for. We have discussed some of the software already and some of the cameras that people use.
Well, what camera do you use?
Well, I've got a Kodak SmartShare or EasyShare, Kodak EasyShare, that I'm really not real pleased with. But it does the trick, and it takes videos as well as snapshots, and you know has various options that you can set of using or not using, you know, different
okay.
features. It's a little bit awkward just to handle as a camera. It's a little small. I think.
Yeah.
But it does a fairly good job.
Now, this is made by who?
Kodak,
okay.
The one that I really like, I gave to my son, and it's a Fujitsu. I don't know, it was just a little bit easier to use. Easier to use the viewfinder, was a little bit larger. I don't use the digital screen to take my pictures because usually I'm outdoors where I can't see at all and can't see the screen, so I look through the viewfinder, which is either... You know, the darkness of nothing where the camera is, or there's a hole there, and I try to center on the hole of the viewfinder.
So now, if you went to, for instance, a museum, and mm-hmm. they wouldn't let you touch things and you couldn't see real good, would they let you take pictures there? Have you had that experience yet?
I haven't had that experience indoors. I have outdoors. I've taken pictures at car museums. Actually, at Sparks, Nevada, I took pictures of every car in the car museum.
Really?
Yeah, and they let me do it, and they were very, very nice about it. And that was great fun. They even let me get some places that I shouldn't be in order to get a good picture so that I could take it home and see it.
Are you a car buff? I mean, do you like cars?
I've always liked cars. We've always had things like MGs and Jaguars and things, and I've always liked cars. My second husband was a mechanic, my kid's dad. Mike was a mechanic.
Wait a minute. I didn't think we could talk about that. You told me you didn't want to talk about that.
Oh, well, hey, I'll talk about anything.
You told me those were painful years, and I didn't blame you. We didn't need to talk about
No, those aren't painful years. Those are just love.
You're just glad to be where you are now.
Yeah, glad to be done with that. But, yes, yeah, my second husband was a mechanic. And my kids, of course, had to have cars growing up.
Sure.
And the deal was that Mom would buy them a car if they would share it with me until they left home. And I bought it out of their trust funds and bought them their car.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had to, you know, give me and Jay transportation, whatever we needed with the car. And then when they graduated from high school, they could take it. Well, when my son hit 16, I knew this was going to be my last car. I didn't have any more kids. I wasn't going to have another vehicle. So I wanted a red truck. So we got a 1979 Blazer with a 4-inch lift, maroon with red ghost flames. It was awesome.
Not the typical car blind purple people would...
it was great.
But then after saying that, I don't know what would be the typical car blind people would have. I have no idea.
I have no clue. But it photographed really well.
Your son was happy with this car, and he's into photography too, obviously, since you've given him a camera.
Well, no, actually he's not. He's into living in Georgia. And, you know, like, could he move any further away? And I gave him the camera hoping he would send pictures because, you know, I mean, he's my baby and he's way over there.
That's about as far away from you as he could get.
I know.
I'm sure
there
was an accident. I'm sure it wasn't on purpose.
Well, he was following true love.
We've all done that.
Yes.
Sometimes.
So it was okay. We encouraged it because you have to follow true love just in case.
Yeah, in case it's really true love.
That's right.
Now, just real quickly, we're about out of time. Are you still working in the blindness field? What do you do for a living?
I'm retired. I had to take medical retirement. My nose-on-screen work with rehab kind of did in my neck, and my hands are numb, and I'm no longer doing rehab work. But I'm retired, and I always wanted to grow up to be a crabby, crippled old blind woman, and I managed it by 50, which kind of surprised me, but hey,
This getting old is not near as much fun as they said it was going to be, is it?
No, but it beats the alternative.
The old dirt nap. I guess it does.
Yeah.
All right, give us your address again for your web, this is a listserv for
listserv, yes,
blind people who are into digital, or actually photography of any kind.
Right, correct. Yes, they can use film. We're old-fashioned. It's all right.
All right, give us that one more time, and
okay.
Maybe we'll get some folks for you.
It is digital-vision, no S, just vision, singular, at yahoogroups.com.
And it would be digitalvision-subscribe at yahoogroups.com if you want to get on the list. Like you said, if you want to do everything, you need to do it through Yahoo. So that
Right. And it's better to subscribe through Yahoo for this one because we do have things on the website.
And Yahoo makes you do a little profile of yourself, but you can lie on it if you
can lie. You don't have to say anything but your name.
How do they, you know, they don't know any difference. They don't really care. They just want to be able to identify you from other people. And they think that it would be good if you had a little thing on there.
Yeah.
Well, you seem to be having a good time, and I certainly enjoyed visiting with Jay. Did you all hear the program? Did you hear him?
Oh, yeah.
Good.
Yeah. And he has more new typewriters.
Yes, he has more new. That's just what he needs.
Look out.
His more new typewriters. I hear a little dog in the background barking.
That's D-O-G. That's our dog.
That's what you call it. D-O-G.
D-O-G is our little mutt. The guide dog doesn't bark, but the mutt barks.
I got to come see you folks one of these days.
Do that.
You seem to be having a good time. Tell Jay hello, and we thank you much, Kathy.
Will do.
All
take
right.
care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Two pretty interesting folks who both seem to be enthusiastic about what they're doing, digital photography and longboat racing. What a thing for blind people, longboat racing. Anyway, we appreciate you listening. If you would like to be a guest on the show, we'd love to have you. You can email me at Phil, just P-H-I-L, at Philpar, P-H-I-L-P-A-R-R, .net. Phil at philpar.net. How much easier could we make it, folks? Think about it. We'd love to have you as a guest. You don't have to be a superstar. You don't have to have done anything except be dealing with blindness on a day-to-day basis and living as normal a life as you can. I hate to use the word normal, but living life to the fullest and hopefully enjoying yourself. So email me, Phil at philpar.net. If you want to call, 936-634-9500 is our phone number. If you are listening to this on ACB Radio this weekend, Blind Handyman, the Blind Handyman, not just any Blind Handyman, but the Blind Handyman will be on next. If you're listening on the radio reading service, I have no idea what's coming up. If we're not on your radio reading service, let us know. We'd be glad to send the program free of charge to anyone who will air it. Our idea is to reach as many folks as we can with our little program. Come be a guest. Phil at philpar.net or call me, 936-634-9500. I've got to go hunt a chainsaw. It's a long story, but I'll tell you about it later. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.